call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. There is a quorum present, and thanks to everybody for bearing with us. We started a little bit late today because there were some other committees that went longer. So thank you to those committee members, staff, and folks in the audience. But I still anticipate we only have two bills on the agenda, so I still anticipate that we'll get done on time today and that we won't need to go over. The first matter of business is to approve the minutes from February 7th, 2023. Representative Novotny, care to make that motion?
Chair Mohler, I move to approve the minutes from the last meeting.
All right. All those in favor of the minutes from February 7th, 2023, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The first bill we have on the agenda today is House File 1048. It is a vice chair vice bill. We'll give her a minute to get up to the table. We do have a number of members from the community that have signed on to the bill, so that's great. And I will move to lay over House File 1048. We do have an A1 amendment, so once you get to the table, we will have you describe the amendment.
What am I running shoes today?
Great. And if you would like to move your amendment, the A1, and then describe it to us, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment is something I've been working on for several weeks with the youth intervention programs. So we thought of reporting requirements before they were cool. And I think they'll just be a really important way that we can really understand where this funding is going. And how it's impacting our youth. And so I would encourage members to support this amendment, just creating some reporting requirements. Thank you.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Feist, please describe your bill to us as amended.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first youth intervention programs grant legislation passed in 1976, authored by State Senator Skip Humphrey. The original intent of the bill remains intact. It's a stable source of funding for youth-serving programs and support for young people's development into healthy adults across the state. Today, a diverse set of youth work disciplines make up current 75 YIP grantees. This program has been historically underfunded, and while our public safety budget has continued to expand, the YIP grant has not, and this is really a key public safety initiative. We need to catch up. The last time that the Minnesota Office of Justice Programs issued a request for proposals in 2021, the amount requested was 5 times the amount available. And I just wanted to mention that I had the opportunity on Tuesday to attend one of the YIP grantees, Boulder Options in Minneapolis, and it was just a really wonderful opportunity to really see where this money goes. There were a number of children there, ages 10 through 14, who were referred by social workers in their schools in a really structured environment, in a really safe space with their mentors, learning how to do comic book characters. So I made a comic book villain, and it was just a really, really great opportunity to just understand what we're spending this money on. So I would also just direct committee members to the really wonderful letters that are in their packets, both from people who have participated in these programs, who have run these programs, different grantees. I think they're just a really good cross-section of the community members who have been impacted and who have participated in this programming. And because both I and Mr. Munier love David Bowie, I feel like we need a quote. So I would say we really have a good thing going, and I would encourage members to support this funding. And I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Vice Chair Feist. And it looks like we have the first testifier is Enzo La Calisara. Yep, that's fine. Paul Munier.
Very good.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Munier. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you did a good job with my name. Very good. Happy National Pizza Day, everybody. I don't know if you're aware, but my name is Paul Munier, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Youth Intervention Programs Association. Most people know us as YIPA. YIPA is an inclusive association of youth-serving programs that empower our young people. Together, we create a one-of-a-kind community that unites the large and diverse field of youth development. We learn from each other, encourage each other, grow together, and share a common just cause. and that just causes the well-being of our young people. Currently, we have 224 Minnesota members, 5% are individual members, 30% are YIP grantee members, and 65% are the non-YIP grantee organizational members. That's 157 youth-serving organizations that are part of YIPA that would meet the requirement for YIP grant funding. Minnesota has about 357,000 young people between the ages of 6 and 24 that are at risk of unhealthy development into adulthood. The current YIP grant allocation of a little over $3.25 million per year positively impacts roughly 30,000 young people, or 8%. House File 1048 proposes to add $10.725 million per year to the YIP allocation. This will reach an additional 107,500 more youth and provide support to roughly 40% of the 357,000 that I mentioned. The YIP grant requires a one-to-one match of local funding, which should cover the other 60% of funding to reach all of those 357,000 young people. Madam Chair and committee members, the need is great. This investment will provide a major shift in strength and safety of communities all across the state. Since each YIP grant program is unique and varies greatly, the Youth Intervention Program's YIP Outcome Survey intentionally focuses on a universal subset of 9 of the 40 developmental assets identified by the Search Institute of Minnesota. The survey collects young people's self-reported views on those protective factors. All the research shows that when young people develop protective factors, some people call them external supports or internal strengths, they are more likely to be prepared for success in ongoing education, career, and good citizenship. Over time, studies of more than 5 million young people consistently show that the more protective factors they have, the less likely they are to engage in a wide range of high-risk behaviors, and the more likely they are to positively develop their unique skills and talents. Community-based programs are effective. For the 2022 YIP Outcome Survey, 67% of young people reported it helped them plan ahead and make good choices. And 60% reported that it helped them accept and take personal responsibility for their actions. And then finally, Madam Chair, YIPA plays a significant role in training anyone who supports young people across the state with a suite of learning opportunities that we have called the Professional Youth Worker. In 2022, we had 8,891 training registrations for our live and on-demand trainings. We had 162 registrations for the Art and Science of Youth Work certificate course. We had 3,073 downloads of the Passionate Youth Worker podcast. And we had 3,454 views of the Quick Takes Youth Worker blog. We take great pride in our standards and our processes to ensure excellence. And in 2022, 98.5% of survey respondents said that they learned or reaffirmed skills that will help them in their support of young people. And this, I'm proud of this, 100% of survey respondents said that YIPA trainings enhance their ability to positively impact the outcomes for the young people they serve. I just would like to say thank you for the chance to testify. The well-being of our young people is our just cause. It's what we work for. It's what we get up for every day. And I sure hope this is the year that we can finally make a big impact for our young people. And after the other testifiers, I'd be happy, Madam Chair, to take any questions the committee members might have. You are the committee members.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And as someone who's given trainings before, that 100% approval rate is quite phenomenal, actually. I can only wish for that as a trainer myself. So
we have some pretty phenomenal staff, and we do have standards. Before we do a training, we do a full rehearsal. We never do anything just for the first time. We always go through a full rehearsal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the great work you do.
I'm
not sure who's testifying next. I have two people on the list. I have Enzo Laaz Palisara, and I have Stacy Guilfoyle Collier. So if you both want to make your way down, and I'm not sure who's coming first. Hi, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Yes, I am Stacy Guilfoyle Collier. I am an executive director of Youth and Family Services at the YMCA of the North. I have the honor of leading a team of 80 youth, family, and outreach workers that serve the seven metro county area. I'm so appreciative of all the work that they do every day to serve our young people and our community. I'm also a YPA board member and a YPA grantee. Statistically, what I just introduced to you all should not be my story. Statistically speaking, I should have a criminal record, I should struggle with substance abuse, and I should not be able to meet my basic needs of myself or my family. I grew up surrounded by violence, drug use, and poverty. I've lost multiple peers, friends, and families to violence, incarceration, and drug addiction. I got lucky. In 1998, a pilot program came to my school called Beacons from the YMCA. There I got connected with some of the most amazing, outstanding, caring adults one could ever hope for. They connected me to so many resources, so many programs, and they invested in me. Despite my troubles, they saw endless possibility in me. I'm still connected to all of those amazing, phenomenal people today. They continue to pour into me, and they are an extension of my family. Fun fact, I have been testifying at this Capitol since I was 10 years old, asking for support for my community and for my peers. I stand before you, now 34, asking for that same support and resources needed for my community. The predatory luring that's happening in our community is not stopping. It is increasing and it is growing. We don't need to just match what these bad influences are offering to our young people in our community. We need to exceed what they are offering our young people in our community. Stories like mine shouldn't be an anomaly. They shouldn't be of luck, and they shouldn't be best case scenarios. Every child deserves the opportunity to succeed and live their life to the fullest potential. I'm proof that when there are resources and intentionality poured into our young people in our community, they too have a chance to reach their unique possibilities and pour back into our community and our society. And imagine what type of leaders the state of Minnesota could be on what it really takes to make intentional, long-lasting change. So I appreciate you all listening to my story today. I am more than happy to grab a cup of tea for you to learn more about my story or the amazing work my team is doing at the YMCA of the North. And I appreciate you considering, and I ask you to include this increase and to not stop. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for the work you do and for keep on coming back. Hopefully this will be the year, and very, very powerful testimony. So thank you so much.
Thank you all.
All right, and then we also have on the list Enzo Laaz Palisara. Welcome to our committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Enzo Laaz Palisara, and I attend Anoka High School. I'm here to testify to you today on behalf of young people in support for increasing the funding for the Youth Intervention Program grant. As a young person, and speaking on behalf of my peers, we feel a constant and significant lack of support for our future and well-being as complete humans. Something needs to change, and I believe appropriately funding the YIP grant can be an important step. I can only speak to my experience as a student, but something that I have noticed amidst many of my peers, myself included, is a feeling that the system doesn't care about us. For example, our school district recently held a vote on a spending bill in which 2 out of 3 provisions passed, except for the provision that would have allowed for mental health resources to be supported and made available to students. Rather than trying to support our needs, the district's immediate solution to an increase in drug use and school violence was a massive increase in the amount of police officers at the school. This change only led to an increase in hostility in the school environment, and the perception that those in charge would rather slap a band-aid on issues rather than address the root cause. Sexual harassment and physical assault are an inescapable reality of high school for many, if not most, of my female friends. Suicide rates have increased at alarming rates. Issues such as school dropouts, truancy, youth experiencing homelessness, drugs, alcohol, fights in school, school shootings, and students with firearms are regrettably common issues that young people deal with today. All of this was made worse by COVID. A very close friend of mine took his life at the age of 16. It certainly changed his life, and it impacted all those around him who loved him. I don't like speaking about it much, but I want you to know how real this is to me. His story is his own, but there are so many others like him. I can't help but wonder if he would have had support, if someone had cared more, if more had been done, would he still be alive? I don't want to lose another friend. I'm asking you to help us. The problems seem endless. It feels as if we are left to fend for ourselves. Young people are looking for support, but there is just not enough of it. But the members of this committee can help change this. The problems facing young people are persistent, real, pressing, and dangerous. These are hard, difficult times. The longer we go without support, the scarier it gets. It becomes more likely that many young people will have their lives irreversibly changed as a result. Madam Chair, I believe Youth Intervention Programs Grant can create change, and I'm certain it would mean a lot to so many young people. It will save lives. Please consider the impact you would have on those who so desperately need it and often never find it. Thank you. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, and it was very powerful, and our sincere sympathies to you for the loss of your friend.
Thank you.
I'd also just note that, as Vice Chair Feist noted in the packet, there are a number of letters, and I think the ones from students or people who have been beneficiaries of these grants are just so very impactful, and encourage members and members of the public to take a look at those as well. Moving on to public testifier, we did have one member of the public sign up, and that's Tom Evanstad. Please come forward, introduce yourself, and begin your testimony. And Mr. Evanstad, you'll have 90 seconds. All right.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Mueller, Vice Chair Feist. I'm here today in staunch support of this bill and any bill that helps to save lives and benefits people. And what I'm here to testify about today is, if you, I apologize, I don't have my prepared remarks, but if you were to Google VOTP violence, you will find under crime solutions, the first thing that's going to pop up, VOTP violence, the National Institute of Justice, this is a U.S. government study from September 5, 2017, and what I'm talking about is the subsection of juveniles who are maybe prone to violence and would maybe be going down that route. I'm looking to intervene as well. So again, I am in support of the bill that you are discussing today. And when you look at this program profile called Violent Offender Treatment Program, VOTP, It is rated evidence rating promising. Program summary, quote, this treatment program aims to reduce recidivism among youths convicted of violent offenses in one southern state. The program offers 6 months of intensive therapeutic treatment to juveniles in a residential facility before they are released. The program is rated promising. Results show a statistically significant difference in reduced recidivism rates for juveniles who participated in the program compared with those who did not participate. When you go to program description is lengthy, so I'll go past that. Evaluation outcomes after a three-year follow-up, I'm hearing the bell. So it's 9% recidivism reduction. Is that the bell for me to conclude? Okay, and then thank you. If people would please take a look at this VOTP. I'm recommending an MSOP for violent criminals, but opposite of MSOP, where you're actually trying to treat people and have them released back into the community safely. Thank you very much, Chair Mueller.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public wish to testify in this bill? I'm not seeing anybody else, so we can move on to member discussion. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just note, as I'm sure has not been overlooked, that this is a bipartisan bill. We have authors on both sides of the aisle who have signed on to this. And what attracted me to it when I was presented with it is the notion that there's an inherent accountability just built into how these grants are offered. And that is that my understanding is that every dollar of YIP funding received by grantees must be matched by a dollar of cash or in-kind contributions. So in other words, these groups have to go out and demonstrate their value to the community in order to get matching grants from us here in the state. And I think that's particularly relevant and well-timed considering we had a joint committee meeting yesterday between Children and Families and Education and Finance, where we heard the Office of Legislative Auditor summarize a report regarding grant management, and they found pervasive noncompliance was the term that they used with grant management practices. And I don't want to go too deeply into that, but only to say, I only cite it in order to highlight that that's a problem of incentive, and they're not being, the gears not meshing between the values being exchanged. So what this does, the way that these grants are administered by matching it to funds that are raised from the community, is you have that inherent mechanism where people have to see the value exchanged in the community. And they award that by contributing to what the groups are doing. And then we leverage that trust by providing our grant dollars here through this body. So that's why I'm supporting this. I appreciate this. I'm interested in looking at some of the other stuff that we've moved through this committee and comparing and contrasting how that functions and see if there aren't some opportunities there to make other grants function in a similar manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just following up on that, and the use of these funds is just so powerful. I mean, my goodness, the testimony is just amazing. And I just, following up on Reverend Hudson's comments, I guess it's notable to me that the appropriation is to OJP for youth intervention programs. Actually, even YIPA is not specified in the appropriation itself. It has responsibility for the report. We have a history in this committee of appropriating OJP and having them figure out the best way to get funds out. In this case, it's in partnership with YIPA. But I think sometimes it's been a problem, and I think attending that and actually co-chairing the hearing that Representative Hudson referenced, seems like a lot of the problem comes when the legislature says you have to give X amount of money to an organization, and then sometimes paperwork slides a bit because the agency kind of figures, well, we're supposed to give that money. And working with OJP, because we've told them to, right? And working with OJP in this area and others, they do such a good job of keeping an eye on where that goes and having a process there. And so I kind of want to make sure to note that for all of us in this set of programs and some of the others as well. So thanks, Representative Feist, for your work, and to YIPA and to these programs doing such important work around the state. Thanks.
Further discussion?
Representative Cotty.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. My question will be more for the director from IPA. Is he still, Paul? Some of the contributions that we talked about, you know, the organization that's doing the grant has to provide matching funding. It looks like pro bono contributions are allowed. Is there any limits on the amount of pro bono contributions that are considered in the matching?
Mr. Munier.
Madam Chair, Representative Botany, the one-to-one match requirement, it can be met in a couple different ways. There's hard matches and there's soft matches. The hard matches are if somebody goes and gets a cash donation from somebody in the community or a local government provides some funding, that could be considered a hard donation. There's also some other criteria for that. But then what you're asking about is the soft contributions. And that can be met in a number of ways. And one of the ways is an in-kind contribution. So, for example, if a program, which many of our programs do, is leverage volunteers from the communities. And so organizations are able to provide a salary number for those volunteers to be able to count that as a match. Your question is interesting, and the last thing I want to do is tell this committee something that I don't know. The Office of Justice Program receives the grants and measures the match. I don't know if they have a requirement for if there's a limit to how much of the in-kind contributions can be. But so I could get you that information. I'd be happy to, and I don't know where I would present it to, if it's just to you directly. But I would be happy to find that out and work with OJP and get that answer. But I can tell you a little bit about the grant match, because it is an interesting thing that you brought up, and Representative Hudson was also talking about it. In 2015 or 2016, we changed the match. It used to be a 2-to-1 match. So for every $1 you got in state funding reimbursed, you had to have $2 from the local community first. The problem, though, is we kept hearing over and over again from greater Minnesota communities and the smaller communities that they couldn't meet the 2-to-1 match. And we didn't want some places where there's service islands where you can't get access to stuff. I said that wrong. We didn't want deserts where you can't get stuff. And so we advocated for, and the legislature at that time changed to 1-to-1 so more greater Minnesota and smaller organizations would have access to that grant as well. I'd also like to, I guess this is the time, I never had a chance to do that because during COVID we also asked the legislature and the legislature agreed. We suspended the 1-to-1 match because financial donations just dried up during COVID. Many of our organizations rely on big fundraisers and community events to get the money. And during 2020, when the COVID was strong, they didn't have the ability to raise those donations. So for 1 year, the 1-to-1 match was suspended, but it kicked back in 2021, just to cover that kind of rough stretch that they had. I hope I answered your question. If you want more further information, I'm happy to get that for you.
Actually, you did. And just one quick follow-up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And then under the author's amendment that was submitted, and I think it's a great author's amendment. Thank you, Representative Rice, for bringing that forward. It says the grantees have to submit these reports. Is YIP overall going to be submitting a report as for like your administrative cost? I noticed that you've got a max take of 5% of the grant,
yeah,
which if they get the full grant would be over $1 million,
yeah,
for the two-year period. So do you typically take, you know, what is the administrative cost right now, and do you anticipate with the larger grant by scale, would that come down?
Mr. Munier, if you can answer that question, please. And if you can keep it short,
I'm
we'd
sorry.
Appreciate it. No, it's fine. We know you're passionate about this, and we appreciate the information you're providing.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead.
We welcome the reporting. We're happy to do that. We volunteered to be a partner with OJP and help put together that because we want to know the data ourselves as well. If this full thing was funded, YIPA would not accept the full 5%. I can't tell you what that percentage would be. We have a number of initiatives we'd love to do. It involved learning. We have a youth worker toolkit. We have customized training plans. We would like to do a lot to help our organizations be stronger when they have that moment to impact young people, that they're the best that they can be. But if it's fully funded, I would not take that full amount. We would not need that much. I don't know how I would spend that much money, to be honest with you. I would rather see it go to some of these programs. But we would accept an increase. I just don't know where that value.
Representative Botney.
Thank you, Chair Mueller.
All right. Representative Feist, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to read a few comments. Mr. Munier gave me 50 pages of one-sentence responses from youth who participated in these programs, and I just wanted to read a few of those. The question is, please share something about yourself that you are proud of as a result of your involvement in this program. And some of the responses were my forgiveness, that I do my best and care about people, I'm talking to my mom again, I'm learning to trust others, I'm staying out of trouble, it helped me accept who I am. There are just so many. This one says, I got into Harvard. Hopefully they're telling the truth. Some of these responses are kind of glib. That I am a leader. It's just really heartwarming. This person said everything, and I assume they weren't being glib and that they were speaking from the heart. So I just wanted to mention some of those. And just to quote some of our presenters, the word intentionality, I think, is really apt. It's a very thoughtful program in terms of the programs that are supported. One of our speakers said, young people are looking for support, but there's not enough of it. And I just wanted to point to, again, Boulder Options, which was the program I went to on Tuesday night. They have been around now for 30 years. They have a $1.8 million budget. Apparently the guy who runs it is famous, but I didn't realize that when I met him. He's like a gopher. It's just a really impressive program, and YIP has been a really big part of its growth and stability over time. And so I just would encourage folks to support this great program.
Great. Thank you so much. I'll renew my motion and lay over House File 1048 as amended. The CA here is whispering who that person is, the gopher that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that. Sorry for my delay. Next up, we have a representative, Herr Bill. It's House File 600. Welcome back to our committee, Representative Herr. We're sorry we always put you last, and then you have to wait a long time. So we appreciate your patience with us. And since you're not on the committee, I will move to lay over House File 600. I see that you also have the A1 amendment. Hello, Representative O'Neill. I wondered why you were here today. So good to see you as well. I will move the A1 amendment. And Representative Herr, if you wanted to describe that amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing House File 600. The A1 amendment actually is in replacing Subdivision 1 with updated language based on conversations we had with youth justice advocates. The primary change is the removal of the term post-adjudication, as that classification has long-term consequences for youth, and we do not want it to be a requirement to gain access to this treatment.
All right.
There's no changes to Subdivision 2.
Thank you. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Herr and I'm assuming Representative O'Neill together, please explain your bill to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill, as amended, came to be as a result of an incident in my district. The proposal reflects the combined thought and effort of Ramsey County, the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, and the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, along with their violence reduction leadership group. We've worked on this bill for a few years and made changes based on partner feedback and input from both Democrats and Republicans. This bill has bipartisan support with co-authors from both sides of the aisle because everyone understands the need for this bill. I've talked with parents who have nowhere else to turn and do not have the resources to help their child. I've spoken with youth who do not want to be returned home for various reasons. I've heard from residents who have been victims of increase in youth crime who are frustrated. I've talked with law enforcement, lawyers, and judges who want alternatives to juvenile detention centers. Recent increases in violent behavior by young people, particularly carjacking, has brought more attention to a long-standing problem. a lack of culturally appropriate, community-based, out-of-home placement options and other interventions for youth who engage in serious delinquent behavior has been a broadly recognized problem for years. The funding in this proposal will allow Ramsey County to create community-based and culturally specific placement in secure intensive treatment homes. Youth placed in these residential settings will receive intensive wraparound therapeutic and social services. These homes will further Ramsey County's goal of keeping youth closer to family, community, and natural supports in culturally appropriate, community-based, and family-engaged sites, services, and activities. These homes will be developed in collaboration with community and will include continuous learning with and from these youth and their families and service providers to improve the treatment and services we provide to these young people. The bill is requesting an appropriation of $5 million for up to 7 homes with 25 spots, resulting in 4 to 5 children or youth per home. These sites are small and will be based within community. The sites will be required to meet all applicable DHS licensing safety guidelines. Since 2015, Ramsey County has reduced juvenile detention center admissions by 90%, and per our sheriff's office, crimes are committed by approximately 50 youth across the country. This small investment could go a long way towards getting these youth help and services that they need. And Representative O'Neill is here with me co-presenting today because she has really been instrumental on working on this bill and ensuring that we get the language in a form that is really acceptable by everybody who understands that this is an issue that we can address. And she's had long-standing work within with our juveniles as well. And so I wanted to honor Representative O'Neill and the work she's done and as a co-author of this bill to also talk a little bit about the need for the bill and also her experience with this bill and why we're putting it forward.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's really great to be back on the Public Safety Committee or in the Public Safety Committee. I would be here had I not had a scheduling conflict. So my higher ed committee meets at the same time, but I miss being on this committee. There are a few new faces here, so let me just tell you very, very briefly about myself so you'll understand why I'm so passionate about it. And again, I'm really sorry I'm not on your committee because I spent 10 years on this committee. So I used to work at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and I got to see firsthand how incredibly powerful that work was when it was a one-on-one interaction with both adults and juveniles. And it was inpatient, it was intense, and people came out better in the end. They came out with their lives restored, the trauma that they had experienced, they worked through that trauma. And those of you that have been on this committee a while know that the ACEs are a real thing, the adverse of childhood events. The more you have, the more trauma you have, the more difficult it is, and you have to overcome trauma. So I am so incredibly proud to be a part of this bill from the inception, really, because interestingly enough, I have a connection to your constituent that brought this to you. He and I have been friends for at least 15 years, I believe, and have done different work together. And so when he told me about his story, which I won't tell the story because he will tell you, but it is horrific, it is terrifying, and it really brought it home to the violence that's happening across the metro. And this is a solution to the violence. And what happens when a juvenile is arrested and they're brought into the criminal justice system is that if they have a high ACEs score, if they have incredible trauma, and they're put into a place like Red Wing, which I've actually toured a few times. I should also say that I've actually toured and spent quite a bit of time understanding and studying the entire DOC, so the entire prison system, and worked quite a bit to reform that as well. But in any case, when they enter this system, there are so few options for them. And I know the judges are begging for this option. The sheriff is begging for the option. He literally said in the newspaper that about 70 youth or so that are perpetrating quite a bit of the crime, and the violent crime too, as you all know, the carjackings and the robberies and shootings. And if we could safely get them off the streets and especially into a treatment home, where they're safe in that treatment home and they're working through their trauma, that is really, really effective. And so I'm here to support this bill, and this is a real solution for a dire problem. And literally people are dying on the streets. And so I'm happy to support this with you and be a part of this effort. So thank you for hearing me out today, and thanks for letting me be back in your committee for just a few moments. It's wonderful in here.
It's good to have you back. Thanks for co-presenting today.
And I think I only had one testifier on your list. There might be others, but I know Ramsey County Attorney John Choi is here.
Madam Chair, we also have Commissioner Rena Moran, who prior representative, and also Patrick Connolly, who would like to share his story today on this issue. Those are the three that I'm aware of, and Ramsey County Commissioner John Choi.
Okay, great. So if the three of you want to just sort of work your way to the table, I don't know what order you want to present in. And I did see Commissioner Moran walk in. It's also good to see you as well, Commissioner Moran, former representative. So I'm not sure who's going to go first here. John Choi, is that you?
I think so.
All right. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to be here today to talk about the bill that's before you, House File Number 600. And I really want to have a heartfelt thank you to Representative Herr and Representative O'Neill. Sorry, I just the mental block there. But I just really thank you so much for the work that you've put into listening to the local community about kind of the issues that we're experiencing. And this bill is really a product of a lot of hard conversations in our community. And what I think is really critical is that I believe that communities, when we come together and we actually are focused on trying to find solutions as opposed to trying to win arguments. You know, for a long time, we had a lot of stress and tension in our justice system because of the closure of Boy Totem Town and a whole bunch of other things that were happening during the pandemic with the increase in crime and people sometimes trying to blame other actors in the system. None of that really works. What really works is actually collaboration and people coming to the table, listening to one another and coming up with those solutions. And this is really truly a product of us listening to people who have been impacted, the victims of the violence, also listening to the perspectives of those voices in our community that are talking about better outcomes in our youth justice system. And so we had this really hard conversation about what it is that we needed to do, a path forward. And this bill that is here today is representative of what our community in Ramsey County wants to see happen, and we really believe that there is research that this type of intensive therapeutic interventions in small residential places can actually work. And so we'd like to give it a try. We feel like those conversations have occurred, the tough conversations, and we've come up with this solution, and it's informed by a lot of various perspectives. And so I just encourage you to support this bill, and we will in Ramsey County do everything that we can to make sure that we engage our community as a part of this process and actually get the outcomes that we all want, which is we want the violence to stop. We want to address the underlying reasons for the justice involvement for these youth and families. And I got to say, one of the things that I'm really excited about in this bill is the latter part of it, which appropriates $10 million for us to work on some of the reentry. And then secondly, the families. It's not just about investing in the kids. It's actually about investing in the parents, the anybody in the youth's life who loves them. I had so many conversations. If Sheriff Fletcher was sitting next to me, he'd say the exact same thing. We have had so many conversations with parents who are just desperate for help. And this bill will also provide some of that culturally specific resources and help for parents to also be a part of this solution as well. So I just encourage your support and thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. I don't know who's coming up now. I think it's Commissioner Moran. Welcome back, Commissioner. So great to see you. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, and members. I am Ramsey County Commissioner Rena Moran, and I am so excited to be back here, too. This is like my second home, right? So I want to thank Representative Connolly Hurd for carrying this bill. It's a great bill. So the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners is pleased to express our strong support for House File 600, a proposal that works to address and prevent youth violence in our community. This proposal reflects the combined thoughts and effort of Ramsey County, the Ramsey County Attorney Office, and the Ramsey County Sheriff Office, along with our Violence Reduction Leadership Group. A lack of cultural appropriate community-based out-of-home placement options and other interventions for youth who engage in serious delinquent behavior has been a broadly recognized problem for years. The funding in this proposal will allow Ramsey County to create a small number of community-based, culturally specific, intensive treatment homes. Each home will house 4 or 5 youth at a time. Youth placed in these residential settings will receive intensive wraparound therapeutic and social services to address their needs, their individual needs. These homes will further Ramsey County goal of keeping youth closer to their family, community, and natural supports in culturally appropriate community-based and family-engaged sites, services, and activities. These homes will be developed in collaboration with community and will include continuous learning with and from these youth and their families and services providers to improve the treatment and services we can provide to these young people. One of the things that I have learned in my 30-plus days in as a Ramsey County Commissioner, in which I am really impressed by, is their ability to engage community. They do not do their work without going back to make community a part of the process from the beginning. Equally important is the additional funding in the bill that will be used for youth violence prevention and family support to boost the effectiveness of these treatment homes. Our community has been asking for family support groups and resources to support families during the time of a young person who is placed in out of home and to support the family through the period of post-placement reentry. We need services for families as youth reenter the community. Community has also been asking for the development of community-based sites for conflict or crisis de-escalation to prevent incarceration or further system involvement. Law enforcement can bring youth to these sites for short-term stays in order to de-escalate a situation and to get family to needed support services. Ramsey County remains committed to a policy of more community, less confinement, with a continued limited use of out-of-home displacement. However, we recognize the need for more options to keep our justice-involved youth in our communities and connected to their families while receiving the treatment and support that they need. I really do appreciate Representative Hurd's leadership. I really appreciate, Madam Chair, you bringing this bill forward, and we appreciate your time and support for this very important legislation. Thank you all.
Thank you, Commissioner. So great to see you. And then it sounds like you have one more testifier, Patrick Connolly. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Connolly. I'm here today to speak to my family's experience with the carjacking that occurred in late 2021. That December morning, I looked out my kitchen window to see my wife running from our garage with our daughter in her arms screaming, "Patrick, they've got guns. They're taking my car and they want yours." A group of teenagers followed my wife and daughter home that weekday morning after she went to the local pharmacy. These three teenagers rushed my wife in her garage with masks on, pointed a gun at her, and took her purse and keys. The car doors were locked, leaving my daughter trapped in the back seat. My wife begged and begged dozens of times to have them lock the door to get our daughter out of the car. The teenagers finally agreed, the back door opened, and my wife was able to remove our child and run towards our house. Once she entered the house, all I could do was yell at the cops were on the way and locked the doors as they drove away with our car. Thankfully, my wife and daughter were not physically harmed. Hearing my wife scream and seeing her run for her life with our daughter in her arms was the worst thing I've ever heard or seen. St. Paul Police and Ramsey County Sheriff's Office reacted immediately when we called. Thankfully, the Ramsey County Sheriff's Office had the carjacking auto theft, also known as the CAT team, in operation. The CAT team was able to catch one of the teenagers on foot, and the other two after coordinating with the satellite from the car manufacturer. When this first happened to us, I was so angry. In the past year, my wife and I have arrived at the position that these teenagers should have never been able to follow her home in a stolen car and attack her in the first place. All three have lengthy criminal records. They either should have been in a secured facility or the programming that they went through should have had more of an impact. The system is failing. This represents a challenge greater than the justice system today can handle. As a result, what happened to my family is happening to too many others too many times. Our state's juvenile system is supposed to help kids who commit crimes like this find a way to get their lives back on track before more serious crimes happen. Yet today, there are too many situations where the system is failing these kids because there's no real path to rehabilitation to become a productive member of our society. Our conversations with system and community partners over the past year have revealed inexcusable gaps in the system that need to be closed. We need the legal system to have the capacity to investigate violent crimes when they happen so young people are held accountable and to get the support and treatment that they need to turn their lives around so they can be an asset to our community, not a detriment. This includes intensive therapeutic homes for youth whose needs are so significant they cannot safely be treated in the community. Kids with high needs who engage in high-risk, dangerous behaviors need similarly high levels of investment to achieve actual rehabilitation, which is not only the system's stated purpose, but we all, as community members and taxpayers who fund our public systems, should expect and demand. Reflecting on the past year is challenging and frustrating, but I am inspired by the courage and the heroism displayed by my wife on that snowy weekday morning. We now look to the legislature to be courageous, to make the needs of young people and the justice system a real priority by investing meaningfully to fix a broken system. For these kids, who are literally the future of our community, and for the safety and well-being of the citizens of our community. I'd like to thank my representative, for her leadership and listening to my wife and I, my old friend, Representative Neal, who was one of the first phone calls I made after this happened and said, I need help. And I'd like to thank the Ramsey County Board, Melissa Finnegan, who's just been fantastic to work with on this, Sheriff Bob Fletcher, who I've grown to love in a crazy way. He's just a wonderful person. And a new friend, County Attorney John Choi. Also in the audience is the Minnesota Business Partnership, who's been very helpful in drafting this language, and the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce for their support as well. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time today, and I ask for your support on this bill, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, and we really appreciate you sharing your story and trying to help us craft solutions to these issues. So thank you so much. I think we had one member of the public sign up to testify, Tom Evanstad. You know the drill, so go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much again, Madam Chair. And this time it would be my rep, or ex-rep, in 66A. Rep her, so thank you very much. I'm here today to testify once again that I am in support of any bill that helps to save lives and helps children. Specifically, though, I'd like to throw out there to the committee the idea of intervening before these juveniles wind up in the criminal justice system under County Attorney John Choi's purview. And the way to do that would be to take and expand the civil commitment, which currently only has the sex offenders, and include violent criminals. Why are only sex offenders subject to treatment and help from the state? So I'm just, again, what I'm asking is for the state to look at, and this committee, a bill where you intervene outside of the criminal justice system, which, with respect, is recycling the violent criminals. And you don't have to believe me. Go to Crime Watch, Minneapolis. Every single day, you're going to get from Hennepin County, Ramsey County, all the counties in the metro area, the violent criminals are being recycled. So I spent 10 years in the Department of Corrections. I talked and met, knew thousands of prisoners that were adults that came in as juveniles. I have a lot of knowledge about why adults wind up in prison. And the way to solve this, let me rephrase, this is not going to be the solution that was testified to. This won't solve the crime in Ramsey County. This is 30 people at a time for $5 million. So I'm just respectfully suggesting scaling this. What about the 500 of the other 1,000, you know, folks that are need help? So an MSOP concept for violent criminals. Help them, and then the opposite of MSOP. Get them the violence treatment that actually works, and then get them back in the community safely. Thanks again, Chair Mueller. Thank you, committee.
Any other members from the public who wish to testify? All right, come on forward. Please introduce yourself. Yep, we'll give you 90 seconds as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. State your name for the record, and you can begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Mueller. My name is Malaika Abon. Committee members, I am the interim executive director at the Legal Rights Center in Minneapolis, and in my role, I help to organize the Minnesota Coalition for Youth Justice. This community coalition brings together youth, families, and community members with advocates, youth workers, and community organizations to advocate for a transformed youth justice system in Minnesota. When the ideas included in House File 600 were introduced last year, our coalition had the opportunity to meet with leaders in Ramsey County about some of our ideas on the language of the bill. We're thankful for their open hearts and ears and can see some of the feedback incorporated in the current language and amendments, including making sure that the facilities would be accessible in advance for young people without adjudication, having the facilities being licensed through the Department of Human Services rather than the Department of Corrections, and collaboration with community. However, we do not support the creation of any more secure facilities in our communities. We're in alignment with all of you that we want young people and our communities to be safe. We also agree that we need to be investing in the roots of community issues. There are major contradictions between the ideas of cultural competence and secured facilities, between therapeutic support and a collaboration with law enforcement. The number of children referred to prosecution in Ramsey County has been cut in half since 2016. In Hennepin County, where I do most of my work, there's been a 75% decrease in youth and out-of-home placements. Our systems have been working hard to reduce incarceration. And yet, in these same periods, local correctional facilities have closed without corresponding decreases in county corrections budgets. We don't deny the reality that there are times when home is not the right place for a child to live, but these placements in those scenarios do not have to be secured. With the right flexibility of program design, staffing, youth advocacy, even the most disconnected child can find safety and success in non-secure placements. We hope and ask this committee to consider an investment in our communities and in approaches that look to reduce crime rather than continuing to invest in reactive measures that aren't getting at the root of our community problems. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. And we do have some of those proposals to reduce crime before us as well. Representative Frazier's House File 25 actually comes to mind. So we are trying to take a comprehensive approach here. So thank you. Thanks for testimony. I think somebody else raised their hand to testify. Please come on down and introduce yourself and begin your testimony, and we'll time you at 90 seconds as well. Go ahead.
So my name is Tucson Davis Darks. I was born and raised in South Minneapolis. I'm now a Ramsey County resident and work in Ramsey County at Face to Face's drop-in center, Safe Zone, downtown St. Paul. I'm part of the Minnesota Youth Justice Coalition that Malaika just spoke about, and I believe everybody is sincere in trying to solve a very complicated problem that is beyond a household and beyond an individual juvenile. I know somebody spoke to Howard Teen Challenge. People get to work through their trauma, and they do. The problem is they return to an environment that breeds trauma. I don't think a locked facility does a whole lot. I think that's traumatic as well. I think back in the 70s, and it's probably going to rightfully upset some women in here, but, you know, in the 70s, they formed what was called the Lawyers' Wives of Ramsey County. There were households. They weren't culturally appropriate intensive treatment centers. They were loving families that were getting youth out of, back then it was called, what later became Glen Lake. It was Hennepin County's poor farm. And as black youth started going to them households, it became complicated. So I think we should consider investing into families rather than, because I don't even know what a culturally appropriate intensive treatment center looks like. I don't know in my community what intensive treatment is. So I think everybody here is sincere, but I think we need to be really about considering about what we invest in, because when you speak about ACEs, right, we know one ACE score is an incarcerated family member, right? That gives somebody a point. So we don't want to perpetuate. And believe me, Mr. Connolly, I struggle. I have youth that are referred to me that I see. I see love works, right? I've been held up in front of my house. I've been shot in front of my house before. But I know them youth need love. They don't need, they shouldn't be off the hook. There's an accountability practice they need to take and not be held accountable. They need to take accountability. And I worry about the road we go down. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And I don't know that anybody else has signed up, and I do want to make sure that we get to member discussion. But Representative Herr, would you care to address the comments from the last two testifiers, and especially the question I think is raised, what would this home actually look like?
Yes, thank you, Chair Moeller. And I want the last two testifiers to know that I completely agree with them. I really struggle with the language of being able to secure a facility also. But I did visit the JDC and also a group home right now, Jelani House, and it is run by BIPOC people, primarily African American, and also the youth in that facility were all BIPOC children, youth, and they specifically said to me, "We can't take the most youth with the greatest needs because we are not a locked facility." And it's not that we are locking kids up to not let them out. Most of these facilities will be unlocked unless it is to protect the youth from harming themselves or other people. So it is not the same as bringing them into a facility and locking them up, that they would still receive intensive services. And it was actually those facilities that said, "We have to turn away certain youth because we cannot treat them because we can't, our doors are open and they don't lock and they are homes." And so there is no perfect solution. I hope that we have the conversation not as having an or conversation of we're either going to lock them up or we're going to invest in family. We need to do both. It is really important, and that we are failing our most vulnerable youth who have the most critical mental health needs, and we do have to figure out a solution. And I wish that, and I have had family members who in youth who it didn't matter how much we loved them, that they needed something we couldn't provide. And we are all educated and had financial resources and had the privilege of time and all of their access, and we couldn't help those youth in our family. And so this is creating an additional solution for a small number of children and youth who really do need this additional support. And I wish there was better language. I wish there was a better solution. But I'm hearing it even from communities of color, the Mothers Against Community Gun Violence, who have been working with you for years, talking about our most severe and critical need youth who need intensive support. They're asking us to have additional solutions. And so, I would be more than willing to have more discussions about what it can be, but community is asking for this. BIPOC communities are asking for this as well.
And I'd like to move to member discussion here, and I have Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Herr and Representative O'Neill for bringing this bill. I really love Subdivision 2. I think looking at the impact of kids when they are in out-of-home placement and looking at supporting families and supporting the process of bringing them back home in a really successful way, I think that is a really important place to invest our dollars. As Mr. Connolly mentioned, the justice system can't handle the current situation, and so I just kind of want to point back to like the YIP grantees that we talked about. Our previous testifier talked about how, like, statistically speaking, she would have had a criminal record by now, had substance use disorder, but instead, because we invested a lot of these dollars downstream, she was able to stay on a really productive path. And so I think we need to be very thoughtful when we're looking at secure facilities, as presenters or speakers have said. And I think the licensure issue, making sure that it really is licensed by DHS, I think is a really critical aspect of that. And so those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. I got a couple questions. In the case of a violent juvenile, would that bypass going to a juvenile detention facility right off the bat?
Representative Park.
Unless Representative O'Neill knows the answer, we could defer to our testifiers who are here to have more experience with juveniles.
County attorney.
No, he should say.
Okay, all right. We can just scooch over and he can pull it.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think the answer to that question, it depends. So if it's like a homicide type of case and serious, there's a option that the youth could be certified as an adult, stand trial. And then for other types of instances, Red Wing would be an option as well. But I think what we've heard from our judges, especially in Ramsey County, and we have a violence reduction leadership group, which also includes a judge from Hennepin County. And they'll tell you the same thing. What they feel is that they don't have the options of in between. So you've got Red Wing on one side, and you've got electronic home monitoring on the other. Yeah, and so like the options in the middle, oftentimes like there might be some options, but they're not real options because they don't want our kids, or they're full. Also, too, a lot of these facilities, places, are having workforce issues as well. And so there's just a lot of challenges right now in the justice system. But I think, and then Representative O'Neill was talking about the
just Red Wing is like just a little
bit. Right. So the Red Wing would be a Department of Corrections facility, and it would be more of like an institution-like setting. What we're trying to build out in Ramsey County is we believe that something that is non-institution-like, that is very wraparound, focused on the youth, and also coupled with the resources that we have for families, and engaging community as a part of those solutions could actually lead to better outcomes.
Representative Whitty.
So I appreciate what you're talking about, and I do have a comment at the end because I think I can help the cause, but I'm talking about someone gets arrested and they're not being placed right in the house. They're going through the juvenile system first, and then you're giving them a sentence, and then we're finding the right facility for them to be brought to. Is that correct?
Post-adjudication. But this bill, with the amendment, it also allows for pre-adjudication as well.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you. So I'm going to date myself. Over 30 years ago when I was on patrol, we had a place in Burnsville called Harbor Shelter,
mm-hmm.
and it was in a residential setting. And we would have multiple juveniles brought there. Usually it was after sentencing, but it could be a runaway or domestic at a house that they could be brought at just for the calming down sense. I don't know if you're aware of that program, but the number one thing that happened that brought us there was the runaways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so my concern is more of if you just committed a crime, you're probably more likely to run away at that point because you're afraid of what's happening. And I think the calming down process is probably better in a secure facility until we got this through. It worked great. I mean, we stopped out there all the time. I'm just, that'd be my only concern as you look at this.
I just want to address that. So we're talking about the option of making this secure. So for in that situation, if the best placement for that juvenile who's, you know, likely to run away, likely to be in danger, likely to endanger others, then if we're going to build up to 7 of these, one or two of them could be secure for that very reason, to keep that child safe, to keep community safe. That is why they need to, there needs to be at least one or two of these that are secure. Because, as you know, outside forces are all trying to pull that juvenile back into that life. And if with one text message they could be running out the door, that's not safe for them. So that's why there's such a need. And the judges, quite frankly, don't have this kind of interim step. So they could send them to Red Wing, which is big, and it's basically a prison for juveniles. It looks just like other prisons that I've been to. It's very institutional. It's very large. There's it's not as large as, you know, like Moose Lake or something or Stillwater, but it's large for a juvenile facility. And the judges are not so likely to want to send somebody there because it can, I mean, it does cause another ACEs on the ACEs score. So it does cause trauma. And so this is an interim step to keep that juvenile safe, to keep their family safe. Because you can imagine, you know, a mother my size or representative her size trying to handle a 16-year-old that's double our size. What are we supposed to do? So this helps the family, it helps the community, it helps that student, that young person, that juvenile stay safe. And if they need to be in place, just like you were describing, that's an option.
Representative Woody.
I really do appreciate the clarification because I have not seen that as much in here about the secure part of it. I think both settings are going to be great options. So thank you for thinking and thank you for the clarification.
Great. And it looks like we're getting to time here. Oh, Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we're running short on time. I'll try to be concise. Looking for some context on the spaces, 25 spaces, I understand. I forget which testifier it was, but somebody mentioned that there are up to 70 youth who could currently benefit from this. Is that number going to be serviced with a combination? You mentioned Red Wing, County Attorney Choi. Is there a deficit here between the amount of need there is and what this is going to provide for? Is this thought of as a first step?
Who wants to take that? Representative Herr?
I'll take a first stab at it, and then if County Attorney Choi wants to add. So this will likely not meet all of the needs that we have, but it is a first step because we do want to make sure that we do it right and that we do involve community and we do ensure that the resources available and the wraparound services that we're providing actually meet their needs and it's going to be a constantly changing program. So we want to address the most critical youth first, there would be greater need than we would have capacity for.
Anything further, Representative Hudson?
Yes, just very quickly. There's concern amongst the members on this side regarding the secure portion of this, the language of can be secured, and wanting more information regarding what that process looks like, who gets to decide. And then also with the Section 2 funding for community groups, I would just again reference the bill that was just laid over from Representative Feist. And that process that we know that works, that's been working since the 70s, of ensuring that there's accountability by requiring there to be some sort of community affirmation through the raising of funds from the community. As this is being laying over as well, I would encourage looking into potentially seeing if that's a model that could be applied here. Thank you.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mohler, and it'll be running out of time, but it'll be more about a statement. Hopefully this can be have some of these questions that we have, and they're legitimate questions. You have to forgive me. I'm a child of the 60s. I grew up with the thought that separate but equal was inherently unequal. Before it comes to the floor, really would like to find out what culturally specific means. Who will decide what culturally specific means? And how specific that'll be. If we have one house set up for one particular culturally specific group, and that's got beds that aren't being utilized, and we've got another group that's overrepresented, are we gonna let beds go empty for this treatment? And something that could be life-changing just because they don't meet a particular box that they check, how does that work? And that's a bigger question. And the other thing, we didn't touch Section 2. You know, we're spending $5 million on the treatment, the intensive treatment homes, but we're spending $10 million on the community-based programs that there's not a lot of details there either. So would like to dive into that, but obviously we don't have time.
Great, yes. We don't have time, but that sounds like a good discussion that can take place before we see this bill again. So thank you for bringing those concerns. I know these authors are more than willing to work on that, along with the folks from Ramsey County. So if you want to move to closing comments, Representative Herr, that'd be great.
Thank you, Chair Mullen and committee members, for the discussion. And I know we are out of time, but I just want to say quickly that we are always open to working. This language was actually very intentional in this way because there will be a community process. And if you read the amendment, it does state specifically that the input to define what these words will come from the juveniles and the families and stakeholders who are part of this work. So if we define it, then we are no longer giving community the opportunity to make that input. And secondly, that's why Subdivision 2 is so important, is because it will be funding organizations embedded in community already doing this work so that they can also be the support. That's the beauty of this program, is that we have facilities, but we also have then community programs and those already within community doing this work to support what our last two testifiers prior talked about. This is an and situation. That's why this bill, I think, is really important to support, and we will continue to work on anybody who wants to work with us on this. So thank you, Chair Mullen and committee, for hearing the bill today.
Yeah, thank you to Representative Herr, Representative O'Neill, all our testifiers on both of the bills today. We really appreciate all the testimony. So I will renew my motion and lay over House File 600 as amended, and with that, the meeting is adjourned.